This podcast is brought to you by Intrepid Travel, the global leaders in immersive, sustainable, small group travel experiences. Take yourself away from the world you know and be open, curious, fearless, and challenged. Be intrepid. Visit intrepidtravel.com to book your next trip today. A beach holiday is a total cliche, probably the most unimaginative way there is to have a relaxing holiday. Palm trees, golden sands, turquoise waters, everyone knows about this stuff. But you know what? Sometimes the cliches are good. Sometimes they're cliches for a reason. And a holiday by the beach on a tropical island might just be a very good thing indeed. The sound of crashing waves while you sleep at night, that healthy feeling of salt on your skin, the realization that there's nothing else here to do, literally nothing else to do. Of course, not all beaches and tropical islands are created the same. Some are far better than others. Some elevate this cliche to the most enjoyable level possible. And today, we're going to find out what they are. Hi, I'm Ben Groundwater, and you're listening to Fly to Fancy, the traveller.com.au podcast. Today, we're talking about beaches and islands, about sun and sand, about taking your holidays in the stereotypical versions of paradise. Where are the world's best stretches of sand? What do you do in these sunny climes? And how do you ensure that everyone has a good time? Joining me to figure that out are two sun-kissed beauties. First up, he's a writer for traveller.com.au who hails from his very own slice of tropical paradise, Shoreham-by-Sea in England, Rob McFarlane. Hi, Rob.
Hello, mate.
Good to have you on board.
Thank you.
Also with us, she's a writer, editor, and influencer who has visited more Australian beaches than I've had cases of sunburn, Georgia Rickard. Hey, Georgia.
Hello, nice to be here.
And that's a lot because I'm quite white and pasty for people who can't see me. And beaches, like, I like beaches, but I find them kind of boring sometimes. Do you guys, Rob,
totally.
I feel like your experience in Shoreham-by-Sea has coloured your experience of beaches.
It is. Pretty much kind of my experience of beaches for life.
Can you describe this amazing place
for
us?
So Shoreham-by-Sea, as the name suggests, is by the sea.
Yeah,
and so I spent
that's what it says on the tin.
Very much. That's very literal, isn't it?
Yeah.
I spent several years living in a house which basically backed onto the beach in Shoreham-by-Sea.
Yep.
Now, the beach in Shoreham-by-Sea is pebbles
and
is always grey and misty and rainy and cold.
Yeah.
And the only time people come to visit is on the four sunny days a year. And so they think it's great that you lived on the beach.
Right.
But that was the only time that, you know, it was mildly bearable.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's sort of coloured my beach experiences.
Did you swim in the ocean when you were a kid?
Only under duress.
Right.
So it wasn't something you did for pleasure. It was more a sort of a survival technique.
Right. Okay.
So I think that, and as a result, all through my life, I've just never been drawn to beaches. And I think it's because of those formative years spent lying on a cobbled street, which was
which
equivalent
was known as a beach,
to, exactly.
So you should have just stopped at the point where you said, oh, I grew up and our house backed onto the beach. That sounded perfect.
It did.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that
was
it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Georgia, I feel like your experiences growing up were probably a bit different to that.
You know, yes, I had the classic Australian upbringing. I did nippers as a child, spent a lot of time in the pool and in the water. We've actually got some Olympic swimmers in my family, so a big culture of swimming.
Okay.
But I'm actually a bit of a late bloomer when it comes to beach appreciation. And I tell you what changed it for me was actually going overseas and seeing all these other amazing beaches or so-called amazing beaches and going, oh my God, that looks exactly like Newport in Sydney, and then actually coming back and going, oh my gosh. And there's a really amazing quote by actress Rose Byrne, which I love. And she said, you can impress an Australian with a city, but you can't impress them with a beach. And I really think that we have some of the best beaches in the world. So why wouldn't you get out there, plonk your butt down and actually just enjoy whatever patch of sand is near you?
Well, I'll tell you why, because I get sunburnt really easily. I have to just, for some reason, I like action. I like having stuff to do. And I feel like on a beach, I've probably got about half an hour of lying there on the sand, you know, constantly reapplying sunscreen until I need to do something. I need to throw a ball around or kick a football or, you know.
Mate, what you need is one of those bathing huts that they use in Victorian times.
Right.
And actually, they did this at Shoreham-by-Sea. So they would wheel people down to the water's edge and then you would come out, come down the stairs, go in the sea, come back out, and then you didn't have to touch the cobbled street right. and it would have stopped you getting sunburned.
But I think the thing is this sort of fear of traditional beaches for me in some ways has engendered a love of certain beaches, which for me are city beaches. I love a beach that is in an interesting city. So Sydney is amazing for city beaches.
Totally.
You know, Barcelona has a great beach. San Sebastian in northern Spain has a great beach. Rio de Janeiro has a great beach. Those are the places where you can kind of hang out on the sand for a little while, and then when you start getting bored, you can just, you know, go to a really great bar and have a drink, or you can go to a restaurant, or...
If you're in Brazil, you can play volleyball for seven hours.
I mean, I never would, because those guys are extremely talented and I would look, you know,
and we've seen
flabby
you in speedos.
And useless. That's right. Yeah, I'm by far the most covered person on any Brazilian beach. By a good margin. But Rob, you like islands though, right? You
don't... Yeah, I'm more of a, I think for me, beaches are a little bit, as you say, they're more places that you go to do something. So because it's maybe the start of a snorkeling trip or you're going to do a boat trip.
Yeah.
For me to go to a beach and just lie there is, I mean, you know, I live in Sydney and I probably go to Bondi maybe two or three times a year.
Yeah.
And that's mostly to do the coastal walk between Coogee and Bondi, which I love.
Yeah.
And I might lay down for a bit, but I also don't really like sand. And that's another sort of fairly fundamental
Oh, you are flaw. So English. Like, this is terrible.
I guess in shore and by sea, that was never a problem.
That was never an issue. Yeah. I mean, you never had to like...
You're not going to get pebbles stuck between your toes.
Exactly. Sort of dust pebbles off of your swim shorts. So I'm the guy who lies on the grass at the back of Bondi.
Right.
So I'm not even on the sand. And that, you know, and I can tolerate that for a little bit. But the whole thing of just lying on a beach for 8 hours doesn't really do much for me.
Yeah, I love scuba diving is one of my major passions. And so quite often that involves being at a beach. And so, you know, and islands for me, you know, particularly Australia's coral islands, places like Heron Island and Lady Elliot are paradise. I absolutely love them because they provide access to these amazing experiences underwater.
Mm.
How about you, Georgia?
Look, I'm a pretty hyperactive person. Mm-hmm. I do get bored very easily. And that's precisely why I go to a beach because I actually like to go to, and I did this recently on Christmas, actually. I took myself down to Chinaman's Beach on my own for Christmas morning, mm-hmm. not because I'm a total saddo, but because it actually gave me the opportunity just to sit and relax and be calm before the craziness of the day. And so the point of the beach isn't to go and be hyperactive. It's to take a good book and it's to relax. It's to force yourself to do nothing.
Yep.
And that is something that we all struggle with, I think. So if you can overcome it, congratulations.
Yeah. Mm.
I mean, it can almost be quite meditative, can't it? You could almost sort of take it as a... And I think in a way it's quite good to go there not with a book and your phone and all these other things because, it's difficult to do. I mean, you try reading on the beach, it's always too bright or you always get a neck ache or something.
But... Oh, my gosh.
Can you make yourself a little sand pillow where you sort of get all the sand
also,
together?
How do you leave the house?
I take a trowel down and, you know, because bits have to go
you
places and you may have to make little divots. It's, as you can see, it's not a spontaneous trip for me.
I feel like you would like Mexico then, because, you know, Mexican beaches are some of my favourite, particularly the Caribbean coast, because, yes, you're right on the beach and the beach, the sand is very well behaved. It's very white and very fine, so it looks beautiful. Mm-hmm. And it does have a tendency to move around as sand does. But what's beautiful about those Mexican beaches, around the Tulum area all the way up the coast to sort of Isla Holbox is that you have this gorgeous culture of those the bars that are right on the beach with the sand on the floors and plenty of hammocks. There are hammocks everywhere.
Do you love a hammock? We've got to say,
and I just that is one thing we don't do well in Australia. We don't have that hammock to sand ratio.
We don't
done well.
We also don't have beachside drinking very.
No.
You know, like actual feet in sand, beer in hand.
To be fair, I don't know if that I would recommend for Australians given our drinking culture.
Yeah, you're probably right. There's probably a good reason why we don't. But that is, you know, on the other side of Mexico, on the Pacific coast, there's places like Zipolite and Puerto Escondido, and these are like tiny little beach towns, like sort of surfy hippie towns. And you have all these bars that are on the sand. And so, you know, you can sun yourself for a while and then you go and sit down under an umbrella.
Delicious.
And grab a Corona or whatever is your Mexican beer of choice.
Delicious.
Yeah.
And that is where I can appreciate a beach from.
Absolutely.
From a bar.
Yeah, I'm on board.
I
will spend my entire day at a beach
inside.
If that's the case.
And you're right. We don't really have it. It's something you'd never really thought about before.
Yeah,
so.
Like there's not that, you know, the kiosk culture that you have in Rio where there's all these sort of series of small bars that sort of hug the beach at Copacabana, which are such a major part of beach culture in Brazil. And we don't have have that at all in Australia.
Oh, we're just we're doing it so tough in Australia. Yeah. It's really
we just have to put
hard.
Up with these like endless white sandy beaches with nobody on them.
Well, speaking of white sand, can we talk about this now? Because I'm a bit of a bugbear about the world's whitest sand, and apparently
you
it's in Australia.
Yeah, Hyams Beach.
Hyams Beach
in Jervis Bay.
Yes. Yeah. So you know, it's only 3 hours south of Sydney, and it's you know, there's been quite a marketing coup around this apparent Guinness World Record saying that it has the whitest sand in the world, and
although Guinness say that they didn't actually say that.
Well, that is exactly where I was going with this. Now, the locals are actually really struggling with the influx of all the visitors that are coming to visit this beach solely because it has the world's you know whitest sand, which is a fallacy. But more interestingly is the fact that there is whiter sand to be found in Australia, and there was actually a study done by I think it was like the National Soil and Terrain Committee.
You've definitely made that.
It's a real thing.
How do we get
thing.
On that committee?
Yeah. I mean, you know, fascinating and exciting times. You can just imagine what Friday night drinks would look like.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All that soil around.
But they actually found that the whiter sand is not actually at Hyams Beach. It is not even in New South Wales.
I'm going to take a punt on which state
it is in. I think I know this might be, mate. This is your home state,
It's definitely Western Australia, isn't it?
You know,
it has to be.
Really?
What would you say?
I was going to say,
it actually is my home state, so thank you.
Oh, mate. Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, it's hard to keep track.
But it's got to be Western Australia. The beaches over there are
isn't
incredible.
It Whitehaven? I thought Whitehaven had the squeakiest, cleanest.
Very, and Whitehaven is 96% silica. Okay, so interesting. Okay, both of those, beaches in WA. Yeah. Mate, I was the one that instigated the research, let's be honest. No, both of those contenders were in the top two or beaches in WA. So the top contenders that they had were Lucky Bay in WA around near Esperance and Hellfire, which was just around the corner from Lucky Bay, Talabudgera, which is on the Goldie, Whitehaven in the Whitsundays, Squeaky Beach in Victoria, Boat Harbour in Tassie, Hyams and Bromby Island, which is in Arnhem Land in the Northern Territory. Interestingly, nothing from South Australia even made the cut for the top list. I mean, it's exciting stuff,
cool.
guys.
It
right?
is. South Australians.
But the beaches.
We just lost all of our South Australian listeners.
Exactly. They just switched off. Going to drink wine.
If anybody has a white sandy beach that they want to reveal the secret of in SA, send it our way. But no, the whitest sand in Oz was officially in Lucky Bay in WA.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I'm not surprised. I haven't been to every beach in Australia or every beach in the world, but to me, the beaches of Western Australia are just incredible. There's nowhere else like it.
You can't tell people, Ben. Don't let the secret out.
Like, I mean, for starters, you have this incredibly white sand and, you know, beautiful clear water of the Indian Ocean. But then you also have sunsets over the beach, over the horizon, because you're west facing, which is just, you know, obviously there are other places in the world that have that, but that combination of all of those things, there's nowhere else in the world that.
I went to Perth for the first time last year, maybe 10 years.
Yeah.
And I went to Trigg Beach, I think it was called, which is just sort of outside of Perth, obviously, on the thing. And I sat there with a glass of wine and some nice food and from a safe distance, obviously, from the sand.
Obviously,
watched the sun come down.
Didn't actually come into contact with
it. And it was genuinely glorious. And people have gone on and on about this sunset over the ocean thing. And I thought, it's a bit of a marketing ploy, but it really is spectacular.
Yeah, I've spent many a sunset around Margaret River particularly.
Right.
You know, again, for me, there's other things going on. You've got the great wine and food there. And so you can take those things onto the beach, places like Yalling Up or Bunker Bay near Dunsborough, and it's just so beautiful. It really is amazing. Yeah.
We need a bit of that over here. We need a mirror or something so that we didn't set up sunsets on the East Coast.
I was born and bred in Sydney, but I really have to say I think WA has the best beaches in Oz. Oh, it pains me to say it.
But I mean, also, you know, they're in no danger of being overrun over there. It's not an easy place to get to. Like even from the east coast of Australia, you have to fly 4 or 5 hours to get to Perth. Then you have to drive another 3 hours to get to Margaret River.
If you want to get to Esperance, it's even further.
I mean, from London, it's only 17 hours now. Right. So, I mean, there's probably a lot of direct people just hopping on our flights.
I do think it's going to change. Western Australia is having a real moment in the sun at the moment. Mm. And,
so to speak.
So to speak. But I think I spent almost 2 months in total road tripping around WA last year and really got to know a lot of it quite well. And it's, the beaches are just exquisite.
Yeah. Even, you know, Esperance, where you don't get the sunset over the horizon, you still get, you know, incredible. It's the sand.
The whitest sand in the world.
The bluest
water. Yeah, it's pretty special.
Let's talk about some of the other sort of stereotypical ones. Rob, you mentioned Bora Bora in French Polynesia.
Yeah.
Is it really as good as people make it out to be?
It sort of is.
Is it the beach? Is it, you know, the whole experience?
I think it's the whole experience. I mean, that still is my benchmark for tropical paradises.
Yeah, right. Okay.
And so, and it'd be interesting. I'm heading to the Maldives soon.
Yeah.
And so it'll be interesting to see how that sort of slots into that.
Yeah.
But because it's an island, but it's sort of surrounded by these atolls. So it's got a protected lagoon. The water is just ridiculously, it's like that mouthwash blue that looks like it's been photoshopped.
Yeah, right.
And when you get into it, it's warm. Like the whole place is just delightful. Yeah. And you've got overwater bungalows and amazing resorts and great food. And so that for me, it'd be hard to think.
For me, one of the best ever island trips or beach trips that I've ever been on was in French Polynesia as well. I was on this small island. We had to fly there from Tahiti, which took about an hour or so. A resort called Motu Ninamu, which I could never afford to stay at if I had to pay for it myself. But fortunately, it was through work.
I looked
at the guest book at the end, and there was one thing that said, thanks for a great stay, Johnny Depp. And I was like, right, okay, yeah. Because it's basically a private island. Yeah. You can get away from paparazzi and stuff, but it's not that luxurious. Like, it's just sort of beach bungalow style. Mm. But you're in this incredibly beautiful place, and there's all these activities to do, which is what I love. You know, there's surfing, there's kite surfing, there's scuba diving, there's fishing, and basically there's a guy who runs it, an Australian guy called Chris, and you get up in the morning and he'll say, oh mate, I'm just going to go out fishing. Do you want to come as well? And you're like, yes, I do. And you jump in his boat and you go about, you know, 20 meters offshore basically, and drop a line in, and there's marlin and mahi mahi and all this stuff, and then you go scuba diving and there's these huge shoals of tuna going around you, and
It's nuts, isn't it?
Places like that, I feel, really just remind you that there's so much beauty in the world, right? I mean, you were talking about going to the Maldives before, Rob, and I've got to say, that's one of those places that actually lives up to the photos, right? Like, there's, you know, especially with the advent of Instagram culture, every place can look beautiful at a certain time of day or in a picture, but the Maldives is literally that photograph brought to life.
Yeah.
It's just jaw-dropping. That's all I have to say about that, actually. It'll make me really emotional.
But that's the problem, isn't it? I don't know how you find this, but when you go to those places, it sets this new benchmark. Mm, and so then when you go back to shore and by sea, like things...
It just doesn't,
you know, the cobbles aren't quite as, you know... And so it does, it's hard. It's like anything. When you stay in nicer hotels, then you have to start appreciating other things about those places.
Yeah.
Maybe activities you can do or the access to a city. But, there's some pretty high benchmarks out there.
The Cook Islands is another group which is quite amazing. It's never mentioned in the same breath as Maldives or French Polynesia or anything, but there's an island there called Aitutaki, which has this lagoon. It's sort of a coral atoll, basically. It has this lagoon, and it's just flawless, you know, perfect white sand, beautiful clear water, and, you know.
Tell me it's $20 accommodation.
Some of it's reasonably, you know, affordable, basically. It's not super expensive. It's a working island. People live there, it's just a normal place. There's a church that everyone goes to on Sunday, and people sit around on the beach playing ukuleles and stuff. It's super stereotypical.
Intrepid Travel can help you enjoy some sunshine without the all-inclusive flop-and-drop resort experience. On an Intrepid small ship adventure cruise, you'll get access to the hidden islands and beaches that a big ship can't reach. From the lesser-known islands in Indonesia to the hidden treasures of the Greek Cyclades, you can spend time exploring destinations and recharging your batteries on some of the world's most pristine beaches, away from the crowds. See Intrepid's full range of Asia and Europe adventure cruises at intrepidtravel.com/adventure-cruising.
But let's talk about, I want to talk about some of the places we don't like as well, because, you know, it gets a bit boring just talking about all the ones we love. Georgia, you mentioned St. Barth's.
St. Barth's, yes, in the Caribbean.
Yeah.
That island for me was, I mean, it like, come on. If you're me, right, then you read every gossip magazine that was available to you between the ages of 17 and 22, and you read all about how all the celebrities went to this island, right? It was the best of the best. And I was so excited when I got to go there. as, you know, like a 20, 21-year-old. And I remember we all hired scooters, and I'd never ridden a scooter before. Hot tip, don't actually try and learn how to ride a scooter on St. Bart's because it's extremely mountainous.
Don't try to learn a scooter anywhere other than home. It's a terrible idea.
Yes, yes. Many bruises and a couple of calf burns. But anyway, and we rode around the whole island and explored it all day, and I was with a couple of, you know, fellow travellers from various other countries, and they were from Europe and America, and literally every beach that we went to and stopped at, they would get out and throw their arms out wide and, oh my gosh, we're so lucky to be here. And I just looked around with disappointment and almost a level of disdain because I was thinking, this is just what Sydney looks like. Why are they laughing and crying like it's so beautiful? I just don't get it. And it was the first inkling I had.
You sound like you're a lot of fun on that trip.
Yes, I'm great to travel with. Yeah, I mean,
you keep sneaking off. Where are they gone?
I mean, you know, of course it's still beautiful, but it was such an interesting perspective.
Right.
It was a disappointment to me, given the reputation.
I have found some Caribbean islands like that. Like they just don't quite live up to the reputation that they – I think they garner a lot of that from the US, where people go there on holidays and that's their paradise.
Absolutely.
Whereas for us, we kind of get to experience a bit of that at home, and so it doesn't
make it
as
special.
I think
that's exactly the – I was in Barbados recently and I had exactly the same experience whereby the people coming from the UK, they were like, this is, they've come from shore and by sea, so this is bliss. But for the people coming from Australia, like, yeah, it's okay. And it's stiflingly humid and just that cloying, unpleasant climate. And yeah, I didn't really rate it. I mean, the island itself is beautiful and I love the people and I love some of the culture, but I would never go there just for the beaches.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
We have the worst jobs in the world. Listen to us complain.
This is why we don't have many friends.
Yeah. Rob,
speaking of, this is going to be a fairly controversial one when we're talking about places that weren't particularly impressed with. Hawaii. What's the story? Are we talking Hawaii or are we talking Waikiki?
Well, we're talking Waikiki. And
right,
I think this is
on
the
board,
issue.
I'm on board with you with Waikiki.
Because that's all I've ever been to. So when I've gone to Hawaii, and I've been there a few times, but I've only ever been to Oahu, I've only been to Honolulu, I've only really hung out in Waikiki.
Yep.
I think I did do one little trip up to the north coast, is it, where they do some of the surfing stuff.
Yep.
But that was terrifying because there was, you know, waves pounding.
Yep.
I actually ended up sharing a hostel with three professional big wave surfers. Like, we all shared a room. That was one of the most humiliating. I came in with three suitcases and chinos on, and they asked me what I did. And at that stage, I was working in IT, and I asked them what they did, and they said, we're professional big wave surfers. I was like, okay, we're going to get on just dandy. So that's the only other experience I've had of Hawaii. And so I think I'm judging it quite unfairly because I think if you do get to the other islands, I'm sure there are some incredible beaches, but that it just feels extremely commercialized, very tailored for American people looking for very quick, short breaks.
Yeah.
So I would like to get to the other island so I have a more balanced
view. Yeah, right, okay. Well, the ones that I'm going to put out there are Italian beaches.
Oh, yes.
Ooh, yeah.
I just, they don't, there's sort of this Lido culture where you don't just go to the beach and there's a beach there. It's sort of a mini resort, basically, and there's all these rows and rows and rows of deck chairs. And umbrellas.
Totally.
And the only way to access it is to pay money to hire out one of those deck chairs. And there's nothing sort of organic or joyful about it or anything to me. It's just so kind of stifling and you know, expensive as well. Mm. Like, it's pricey.
Totally. I think all of that Riviera, sorry, George, I think all of that Riviera is like that. Like the Italian Riviera and the French Riviera, whenever I've gone there, and these are places that people rave about.
Yeah, yeah.
And you go there and you're packed in like sardines.
That's it. You hear so many stories about, you know, film stars and stuff going to these places.
Totally.
And you're expecting, I guess, George, the same as your experience in St. Bart's, where you're expecting something incredible and you get there and you're like, oh, this is much better at home.
I had the misfortune of making the move to Nice in the French Riviera when I was, without actually having gone there, I just decided to, uproot my life and move over there. And I remember getting to the beach, which is not a beach. It's a pebble affair, a grey, dusty, rocky pebble affair. And I just remember being so crushingly disappointed. It was honestly, to this day, I still remember how sad I was when I first realized that was what I was dealing with as my local spot for the next however long I was going to be there.
It is very disappointing there.
Indeed.
I would say, though, on coming back to Italian beaches, there are a few exceptions and most of them are in Sardinia.
That's what I was... Yes, I would agree.
Okay. Sardinia is absolutely beautiful.
Isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Some are particularly... it's called the Costa Smeralda, the sort of north eastern coastline up there, and it's just amazing. There are sort of Russian oligarchs in their gigantic super yachts and stuff, which is maybe not exactly what I'm looking for. But yeah, just the scenery there and the water is so crystal clear and beautiful. And there are the Lidos, but you can also find these secluded beaches where there's no one else around. And
Indeed. Yeah. I actually have a beautiful memory of being in Sardinia and standing on the side of a road, and my friend and I had found a fresh fig tree, and it was hot, you know, late in the afternoon, and we were just plucking figs off, and they were so hot and overripe almost, and we were just eating them, and it was just, the seeds were dripping down the sides of our mouths, and then we just went and dived in that water, and it's the same kind of, it's that Maldivian type water that's just jaw-dropping, very special
place. I don't know how the Mediterranean does that, how some parts are not that spectacular, and then all the nice water just goes and collects over here. I'm not sure how that works. Let's talk about some of the kind of quirky, weird beaches around the world as well, because I'm quite interested in this. Places like fake beaches, like South Bank in Brisbane, they're kind of odd, aren't they?
Are you a fan? I'm not. I have to say, I don't think I am. I find them quite intriguing.
I saw someone saying that they should introduce some blue bottles there for the full experience.
Just to exactly. I mean, I sort of get where they're going with it, and I quite like the contrast between that you can be sitting on a beach and looking at a sort of urban cityscape. Yeah. And actually, there's another one in Governor's Island in New York. So when you go over there and you look back towards Manhattan, and contrast is almost quite sort of head-spinning, because you've got beach and then you've got Manhattan.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I just think it's a bit of a halfway house. And just why not go the proper thing and go to a nice beach?
Yeah.
I mean, particularly in Brisbane, you've got great beaches around there.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the problem, though. It's an hour either way, north or south, to get to a good beach. So that's the sort of requirement for something like that.
Right. I don't know. I'm just, I mean, as someone who isn't drawn to beaches anyway, then if I'm in a city and there's other stuff to do, that is probably the very last thing you're going to get me to do.
Fair play. Georgia, what about pink lakes you mentioned?
Yes, I did. And that this...
Everyone loves a pink lake, don't they?
I know, especially...
I don't even know what that is. What is a pink lake?
Well, you obviously have not been... you've not been on Instagram very much lately, because pink lakes have been, the... photographic sensation for the past few years. And Australia is blessed with the good fortune of having a few of them. And they are quite beautiful and quite pink. But the reason they're pink, no one really talks about. And I had the fortune of visiting a few in the last couple of years. And without fail, all of them are extremely sludgy. You can't really swim in them. They're often very high in salt. So almost as soon as you get out, you're covered in this crust. Like, they're sort of as salty as the Red Sea, we're talking. Mm. The reason they're pink is because of the bacteria that lives in the lake, which is just questionable on its own. But they're also extremely shallow. But when you step into them, even on the sidelines, so on the so-called beach, you actually start to sink into this like mud, browny, grey, sludgy, squelchy.
Yeah. The Dead Sea is like that.
Oh,
as well.
It is just, you can, just grade in the photos. But also, they do have delicate pH balances, and really people shouldn't be swimming in them now. I now know that, even the ones where you're encouraged to swim, it's just not even a...
Yeah,
I wouldn't advise it. Not very enjoyable.
Why do people do it? Is it just for the photo, just to get them in a pink lake? Is
that what the gram?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Without doubt, the weirdest beach I've ever been to is a fake beach in Astana, which is the capital of Kazakhstan, which is a sort of freezing cold outpost in the middle of the steppe. In winter, it's usually...
What do they need a beach for?
Well, because in winter, it's usually about minus 20 to minus 30 degrees. I was there in sort of shoulder season coming in towards summer, and it was about 5 degrees and an icy cold wind whipping across the steppe. And so inside a shopping mall, which is a bizarre sort of teepee-shaped shopping mall, right at the top, they have this amazing fake beach where they've trucked in tons and tons of sand from the Maldives. It's heated to 30 degrees inside the whole time. And so you get people like, it's minus 30 degrees outside, the wind is whipping across, and you can hear it rattling in the top of the teepee. And there's all these people in their bikinis.
Drinking out of coconuts.
Exactly, absolutely.
drinking
pina coladas and dancing around like they're at the Café Del Mar or something.
How incredible.
That's bizarre.
It really is.
I mean,
yeah.
That, I can see why you would have that then. I mean,
absolutely,
when the contrast is so extreme.
If it's minus 30, I'm going to the beach.
Totally.
It's 30 degrees in there.
Beach.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's crazy and weird. Kind of a bit like my entire experience in Kazakhstan, really. guys, we are running out of time, unfortunately. But I just quickly want to talk about some cold weather destinations for beaches and islands as well, because they don't have to be hot to be enjoyable or to be beautiful. Rob, you mentioned a few New Zealand islands and beaches, which are quite incredible, and people should definitely visit.
Totally. I think... Yeah, I think New Zealand's got some incredible beaches, and it doesn't really get the same acclaim that Australia does. Yeah. And maybe it is because of the weather.
Mostly because we like talking up our own stuff.
There's a lot of that and putting Kiwis down. But so someone like Great Barrier Island, I don't know if either of you have been there, but it's this island about sort of a 3-hour ferry ride from Auckland.
Yeah.
And it's pretty much deserted, apart from the peak holiday season, it's pretty much deserted. And it has incredible beaches, like really gorgeous beaches.
Yeah.
All the Coromandel, Waiheke, which Waiheke's is the little
great.
Famous. Yeah. Obviously, you've got sort of the wineries and stuff.
Yeah.
And particularly, I was just over there for Christmas. And at Christmas time, they have these gorgeous pohutukawa trees at the back of the beaches, which flower with a startling red flower. And it makes a really, great photo. It's just a beautiful place. I think the problem with those sorts of beaches, and this is the problem with all of these sort of cold place beaches, is the water isn't very warm. Right. So, you know,
those two do seem to go together, don't they?
Why would you, the whole thing of lying on a beach, you sort of get hot and then you go and cool off in the water, but not to the point where you get hypothermia. Like, you want to just have a little refreshing dip and then come out. And so, like, places like Scotland and even Cornwall.
I wanted to put in a word for Scotland because the beaches of northern Scotland are absolutely beautiful, you know, very white sand and these big dunes, and it's all sort of windswept and rugged and lovely. But I lived in the north of Scotland for a while, and we went to the beach one day and I went swimming for about 5 minutes or so. And by the time I got out and was trying to dry myself, I couldn't feel the towel on my skin because I was completely numb. It was just so cold.
Yeah,
you don't go swimming in the North Sea. Crazy bit.
I had
a friend there who was a surfer who used to go out. He was surfing most days in a very thick wetsuit with a hood and gloves and everything.
I was like, mate, move
to Australia. It's not that hard to get a visa. What are you doing?
It's like the Aussies who love to move to, you know, ski fields. You always want what you don't have, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Just like the Kazakhs.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah. Guys, we are running out of time, sadly, as I was saying. But look, to finish off, I'm going to ask you a tricky question. What is one beach, if you had to name your, let's call it your one desert island beach, the one for you to spend the rest of your life at, basically, and never grow bored?
I would say that my all-time favourite beach that I could spend the rest of my life at, as long as I had a mansion on the cliff there, would have to be Balmoral in Sydney.
I'm such a Sydney fangirl.
But
Northern
you know
beaches particularly.
It's where I grew up and I just, it's such a, and it's gorgeous.
It is beautiful.
We
haven't really talked that much about Sydney, even though we could have, because, you know, Sydney, there are more than 100 beaches in Sydney.
There are.
With the harbour and the coastline, and they're really, really beautiful beaches.
We have just we're incredibly blessed. I mean, even if you just take the opportunity to visit a couple that you haven't been to before, the white sand of Cronulla versus the very golden sands of Palm Beach. It's just there's such an incredible variety.
I'm a big fan of the harbour beaches too. Mm. Some of the nice little secluded ones.
Yeah, there's a lot of tiny ones. Like, is it Milk Beach and Vaucluse?
Parsley Bay all really nice and very family friendly.
A couple of nudist ones from memory as well.
Indeed,
I got lured down to one of those on the false pretences once.
Yeah.
That's another podcast.
Indeed.
What's your favourite beach, Rob? Where would you?
What's your desert island beach?
I would struggle with this.
You can't say Shore and by Sea.
Aside from Shore and by Sea, I'm going to say Fraser Island.
Oh, right.
I just think because it's such a spectacle. So
the whole island
is one massive beach, isn't it? The largest sand island, I think,
in the world.
And to me, when I first went there, it blew my mind that they would let you go over there, put six random backpackers in a four-wheel drive and let you career around this sand island and all the things
really
that could possibly
style,
go
is it,
wrong.
To just let people cut loose.
Not at all. And so I remember camping on that beach and just thinking, this is extraordinary. And that was actually one of the reasons why I moved to Australia, was those experiences that I could get access to this stuff, which I don't get in Shore and by Sea. Yeah.
Well, the indigenous name for Fraser Island translates to paradise.
Ah.
Yeah.
I mean, which sums it up.
Yeah. They were onto something.
There you go.
Yeah.
Now, I've actually got two answers for this.
Here we go.
Yeah, of course you do. Hang on.
Look,
if I have to say an island, I'm going to go for Lady Elliot Island in Queensland because there's something about those sort of coral keys in Australia and in Queensland in particular that I love. You know, the trees, the weird birds, the noisy mutton birds, the knotty terns. There's poo everywhere.
I was going to say, isn't that one where you get pooed on all the time?
You get pooed on all the time. Yeah, but I mean, it's all about the reef. And the reef there is amazing. The diving, there's manta rays, there's sharks, there's all sorts. It's really,
exquisite.
Really cool.
Yeah.
And if I'm going to say an actual beach, I'm going for San Sebastian in Spain because, you know, two amazing beaches. You have Playa de la Concha and Playa Zuriola. One is a great surf beach with lots of good waves. The other one is a very sheltered bay which has an island in the middle of it and is very calm and easygoing. And in between those two beaches, you have the old town of San Sebastian, which is filled with the greatest restaurants in the world. So that's keeping me amused for the rest of my life.
You should move there.
With that problem. I should. You're right.
I should live there.
All right. Yeah, you sold me on that.
Yep.
Next trip.
Done.
Well, Georgia and Rob, thanks so much for joining me today. Really appreciate your time.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
If you would like to read any stories by me or Rob, you can find them on traveller.com.au, and you can follow Georgia on Instagram, Georgia Rickard. And of course, to subscribe to Flight of Fancy, you can find us on iTunes or your favourite podcasting app. Remember to rate and review when you check us out as well. And we'll see you next time on Flight of Fancy. Thanks for listening to this podcast, brought to you by Intrepid Travel. Sign up to the Intrepid e-newsletter for more travel inspiration and to be the first to hear about great deals and competitions. Visit intrepidtravel.com to subscribe today.